May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, today we continue our sermon series on the book of Amos. Amos surely didn't go softly on his listeners in his accusations. He gave them all he had, it seems. And at the time, he must have upset quite a few people, but he delivered his message. I'm not sure whether such bluntness is always the best way to deliver the message, but at least his message was fairly clear. Amos told Israel that judgment is near because of the outrageous injustices in the land. The people were going on pilgrimages to Bethel, Gilgal, or Beersheba. These were all holy places around Israel, or even in Judah. But those outwardly religious practices are not what God seeks. Rather, it is a change of the heart that results in action towards others. And how people treat each other, that's not only an individual thing. No, for Amos, it was clear it's the attitudes of society as a whole that affect the destiny of that society. A society that talks about justice, but then does the very opposite, is a society that is under judgment, Amos says. In the case of Israel, that is even more so, because through the law and the prophets, Israel knew the way of justice. Still, it did not follow it. And through that, it turned away from God. Amos lays bare the injustice that he saw. It's there in the court system and the lack of processes for those who are wronged so that they cannot take their cause to higher instances. It's there in the economic systems where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And it's there in the intimidation so that prudent people keep silent rather than speaking up. For those who point out the wrongs are shut down. In the end, Amos concludes that the times are evil. But still, he tells his listeners to turn to good from evil, to seek God and live. Not all is lost yet. Such a cry for justice in the face of entrenched interests, of social systems that hurt, of corruption and greed, such calls for justice are characteristic of the prophets. Amos is not the only one, but he may be the most forceful one. Many of them took up this cry and spoke against the powerful of their times. That's why it has also been a constant theme for Christians throughout the centuries. When I was thinking of giving you some examples, I remembered a sermon series I took about 2 years ago. So I'll just mention the examples I spoke about then. In each case, I took a whole Sunday for each person. But we looked at Bartolomé de las Casas, who spoke on behalf of American Indians in Central America. He challenged the atrocities committed in the Americas by the Spanish. He publicized these atrocities in his books, and he convened conferences with his fellow bishops to pressure the Pope to convince the King of Spain to act. Well, Bartolomé de las Casas spoke before the King himself until the new laws were implemented, and those new laws forbade the forced labor system and slavery. They actually gave the American Indian population greater rights than even the Europeans had. But, of course, passing the laws was not everything, so Bartolomé de las Casas was not fully successful because the Spanish crown could not enforce its law in the colonies in the face of economic interests of the local landowners. And so that's why his lifelong struggle continued, sometimes in words that were not too dissimilar from Amos. We looked at William Wilberforce, who fought for the abolition of slavery, for the economic and moral advancement of the poor and the rights of the oppressed people, for example, in India, among many other things. We also looked at Christoph Blumhardt, a respected retreat leader in southern Germany, who became an ardent advocate for the working poor, for the labor movement, and then he even became a parliamentarian. His hunger for justice never wavered. He later realized that such justice could never be brought about absolutely by human endeavors. It was his Christian commitment that catapulted him into the fight for social justice. And it was the experience of the fight, mainly the heavy disappointments that he suffered, that led him back to Christian commitment and the longing to change the hearts of individuals for God. We looked at Mary Sumner, who also sought to address poverty and social ills, not by confronting the powerful, but by empowering mothers to care for their families. Well, these are just some examples. We can see this concern for justice and for the lot of the poor in every time and age of the Christian church. And at times, that has also meant criticism of the church itself, which has focused too much on power for power's sake, on appearances, and on keeping on the good side of the powerful at times. Christian justice organizations have realized that both practical help and advocacy are required. And so, for example, the Salvation Army is providing food parcels, budgeting help, and emergency accommodation. But it also has a policy unit. It issues reports and lobbies governments. Similarly, Anglican Care runs the City Mission with all its different programs, but it also keeps the needs of the struggling before the people's eyes. It forms alliances with other social services agencies for campaigns and submits on government policy. Now, if I got Phil Bagshaw right, who unfortunately is sick today, so can't be with us today, he has also worked through advocacy to bring greater justice into the health system. But he has also done practical things by setting up the charity hospital. So those two things seem to go together. Word and action need to go together when we want to bring life to those who are struggling. The words of the prophets continue their effect today in the call for justice. This is also part of the church's mission, for through Jesus, such a call for justice received greater meaning. When people are brought from suffering and confusion to health and wholeness, the kingdom of God breaks through. Of course, with Jesus, that always involves the whole person. It's clear that a comfortable existence from a material and medical point of view will never allow humans to reach their full potential before God. There is more to human life. In particular, there's our relationship with God and finding wholeness in God. Through God, our hearts can be opened to love and our hope can be enlarged to goodness and even to eternity. As I mentioned, even though such a thirst for justice is thoroughly Christian, under Christendom for 1,600 years now, the poor have still been oppressed, the powerful have corrupted the courts, and people were afraid to speak out. Just as in ancient Israel, it required people imbued with God's Spirit to stand up for justice. They were impelled by the witness of the prophets and by God's prompting to help others. Still, the overall Christian heritage gave them the possibility to speak more clearly into society. If the society does not know anything about justice and God, it's difficult to speak into it. As the atheist author Tom Holland has pointed out, the Christian understanding has shaped the world. He maintains that the West is so imbued with Christian thought that it's impossible to detach it from its Christian roots. The very ideas that the strong should take care of the weak, that every life, even those who are handicapped or sick, have meaning, that the needy should be fed and clothed, those ideas are Christian at their very core. We take such notions for granted, but they were not always part of what civilized people thought in Rome, Greece, China, or pre-Columbian America and so on. While our world is indeed imbued with something of a Christian sense of justice, as Christians we are called to respond all the more to God's call to care for our neighbor. In our reading from Amos, it's clear that our worship of God needs to go hand in hand with caring for those around us. God, who made the stars, who stands beyond all reality that we wonder at, requires us to seek the good for others. In particular, Amos speaks about proper legal processes. Well, maybe that's not the most exciting form of justice, is it? Legal and process matters seem horribly boring and, well, somewhat legalistic. And yet, justice through proper processes is very important. It gives a sense of being heard when we are wronged. It is important to society or group working and living together. For example, if your job is terminated, you are far more likely to accept that if there has been a proper determination, when you could present your arguments and those have been fairly considered. Arbitrary decision-making by the powerful generates resentment, but being able to lay out the case and knowing we have been heard, then we can see the reasons for decisions more clearly. Of course, such process or legal justice has to be real. It cannot be a pro forma exercise where the outcome has already been predetermined. That's why such issues as proper consultation and decision-making, mediation, tribunals, and appellate bodies are so important, and they are also important in the church. The processes may be boring and seem legalistic, but they are an important part of ensuring that justice is also done in the church. In particular, there has to be some accountability for church leaders. We have seen all too clearly that in some churches, that lack of accountability has led to leaders misusing their position, not necessarily because they are bad people, but because such somewhat unlimited power corrupts and makes people blind to some of their inappropriate actions. And yet, such processes themselves can create injustice by inhibiting people and making bureaucracy unwieldy and unresponsive. To get those processes right in this fallen world does require God's grace and the constant renewed focus on God, particularly in the church. At the heart of our fight for justice must be love. Otherwise, it can quickly lead to bitterness. Because the injustices in this world are so many, and they may, without love, they may quickly cause us to demonize others. In our own times, the fight for justice by some groups has descended into revenge, especially when there seems to be a change in power. That cannot be the way of God's people. We cannot overcome evil by evil, but need to overcome evil with good. That is the way of Jesus. At times, the way of Jesus may be hard, because it's easy to point to others as the enemy. But rather than thinking that we can solve problems of justice by destroying others, we need to find ways of love to deal with others. The best thing would be, of course, if those who commit injustice realize the damage they are doing and change, but often that does not happen. After all, the systems of oppression are often too entrenched and the ideologies are too powerful. Then we might look at the systems and think, well, they need to change. In some situations, that's possible, in others, not. Maybe at times it means escaping the control of the powerful and pursuing alternatives. A good example of this may be the organization Christians Against Poverty, which works to free people from debt. It's powerful interests that want to keep people in debt and in constant consumerism, but by taking the people out of the cycle of consumption and debt, people are freed. Even the powerful interests that forced consumerism and debt on us would be better off if they were freed from pursuit of profits and directed their efforts to more life-giving endeavors. Paul's instructions, which we heard today, on the practical outworking of love should be a continuing inspiration for us. He begins his summary of the outworking of love in the Christian congregation. Here in the church, we are called to build each other up, to pray for each other, to share with those who are in need, and to practice hospitality. And from there, the circle spreads outward to all those with whom we live and work. And from there, the circle is widened even more to look at the bigger questions of Christian living in the world and to questions of justice in society. And so I want to close the sermon with repeating some of the Paul's advice, which we have already heard, and I just want to highlight a few of his sentences. Love must be sincere. Reject what is evil, cling to what is good. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not repay evil for evil. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.